Wheels Across the Prairie, the story of the conveyances and roads which cross the American prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. This program, What They Rode In. Host for this series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. Assisting him is Thurman Fox of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin.
Thurman, I see you have a lot of luggage with you tonight. Taking a trip?
That's right. By stagecoach, that is.
We know that the first roads in Wisconsin were built along the rivers and the old Indian trails by soldiers here in Wisconsin. And, of course, the earliest roads were along Lake Michigan, down into the southern part of the state, and reaching over into the southwestern part of the state where the early lead mining was carried on. The early lead wagons were hauled chiefly by oxen, that is, 8 to 10 yoke of oxen. And I'd like to point out a couple things about the ox-hauled wagon of lead that we see here. Note that on the rear wheel there's a chain, and this skids the wheel and helps to hold it back because the ox wore a yoke and did not help to hold back the load. The teamster walked along the left side of the team of oxen, and he goaded them along with a stick or a switch. And in order to turn them, he did not use reins. He merely spoke to the oxen. G meant to go to the right, and haw meant to go to the left. A lot of the teaming of horses was carried over from the early use of the oxen, and they played a much more important part in early transportation such as this and the logging days than many of us would believe. Most of the plank roads and the early corduroy roads were made by private enterprise. Settlers, as they settled, built the roads, or private corporations built such roads and charged toll on them. That is, the government had no part in the building of these roads except for the early military roads built by the soldiers. The corduroy road was much better than the plank road. It carried better loads. It was bumpy and uncomfortable, and it had to be good to carry wagons like the Conestoga wagon, which was one of the best forms of transportation in early American history in carrying pioneers' goods and carrying freight. The first of the Conestoga wagons were built around 1760. They were curved on the bottom, and this kept the freight from sliding too far forward and too far back as they went up and downhill. Depending on the commodity hauled, they carried from 4 to 6 tons. It's the type of it's called a Conestoga wagon because it was originally made in the Conestoga Valley of Pennsylvania back about 1760 when it was first made. My great-great-grandfather, born in New York about 1791, we say, was a teamster on a Conestoga wagon, or a prairie schooner, as they were also called, and he drove in New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and on to Indiana. And his son, Dave, was a teamster on one of these and then on a stagecoach. My grandfather talked by the hour about his ancestors and the stagecoach and the prairie schooners from stories that they told. Great-grandfather Dave was called Eggy Dave from a time that he had a runaway with a team on a stagecoach tipped over and a load of eggs became broke. You can well understand how he picked up that nickname. The Conestoga wagon, or the prairie schooner, was a colorful wagon. It had a white top, and Thurman will show you a model of it, very beautiful.
Well, the one that we have is indeed colorful, Dan, with a white top, has a blue bottom, and red wheels. If you'll notice, it does have the curve that Dan mentioned before to keep the cargo in place as the wagon went uphill and down. The Conestoga wagon was very important in the 18th and 19th century in American history. It carried supplies to the American Revolutionary forces. It also carried travelers over the Genesee Pike from New York or over the National Road through Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. It was pulled by 6 horses or oxen, and they made 10 to 25 miles in a day depending upon the conditions of the road. And they carried everything, not only household supplies, but they had to carry the seed for planting and fruit trees and also the animals that were necessary to carry on a farm. A girl traveling west in 1847 wrote that she really felt as if she were feeding a farm before she had dinner at night, because there were chickens and dogs and cows and horses and mules that had to be fed. She fed them from a container, as this one is, on the back. It was always carried on the back of the wagon, but when it was in use, she took it from the back and placed it on the front of the wagon. Now, of course, there were other conveyances other than a Conestoga wagon in order to carry people to the west.
Well, it's interesting to note the different kinds of wagons and carriages that people rode in at that time. You mentioned the Genesee Pike, and of course, some of the fancier rigs that were used in the east never came to the west at all. In fact, a schedule of fees charged on this turnpike lists a chair, a sedan chair, and a chariot. And among other fees, we see in our scrapbook here that these charges were charged in about 1809 for a 69-mile stretch of the road. A one-horse wagon, 9 cents, a two-horse wagon, 12.5 cents, a three-horse wagon, 15.5 cents, and then note that the four-horse wagon went up to 75 cents. So we must know that this became a much heavier wagon and probably carried a much heavier load. And then a five-horse wagon was 87 cents. And of course, there were also prices listed there for ox carts and sleighs and every kind conceivable conveyance that you could imagine, and sheep and cattle and horses and the fee that they had. And of course, there was fees also for stagecoaches. A two-horse stagecoach was listed at 12.5 cents and a four-horse stage at 18.5 cents, a lot less than that four-horse wagon. One of the early buses that was used for transportation was the sociable. In New York about 1829. It was used, called a sociable, before the word bus was invented. It had side seats. It held 10 passengers. It was so high that the people had to use a regular staircase to climb there to get in from the rear, as you will note. Of course, every war gives transportation a lift and builds it up, and the American Revolution gave carriage building quite a lift. We're primarily interested in the stagecoach here in Wisconsin because it was an important means of transportation here. And in fact, the stagecoach was a real link in transportation in America for 100 years. Back in 1766, a stagecoach would travel from Philadelphia to New York, and it took 2 days. By 1827, there were about 800 stagecoaches arriving in and leaving Boston every week. The coach we see here is a Concord coach. It was called that because these were originally made in Concord, New Hampshire, about 1830, the first ones. In the east, they were a light vehicle, but in the west, the western Concord was a heavy wagon, and it was made for real rough going. This one happens to be a Wells Fargo-type coach, which means that simply that it was a Concord coach owned by the Wells Fargo Company. It was built to carry 9 passengers, but they claim that as many as 35 people have squeezed in. That sounds to me more like college kids in a phone booth sort of thing. But we had similar coaches here in Wisconsin compared to this. In fact, roads were building up and stage lines were being developed in Wisconsin during that period from 1830 to 1860. The main routes in Wisconsin in which we traveled were from Green Bay, where the earlier settlements, of course, started, and where river transportation was also important. And we went from Green Bay all down along the Lake Michigan shoreline, and certainly from Milwaukee to Chicago, there was an important link. From Green Bay along the Fox to Portage, and then on down to Madison to Prairie du Chien, and from Prairie du Chien to Black River Falls, a real important river town in those years, and Eau Claire, which was another important spot. There was a stagecoach, of course, operating from Prairie du Chien over to Madison, and Madison down to Dodgeville and different areas in there. We saw the stagecoach there at Dodgeville with the courthouse in the background. And the stagecoach operating from Madison to Chicago in 1843 would leave here on a Sunday morning about 6 o'clock, and with good luck and everything going fine, you could expect to arrive in Chicago by Tuesday evening. The round trip fare was $14.25. There was also a stage going from Madison to Portage, and the fare on that trip was $8 one way. If I believe that was right?
Yes, that's right, Dan. We have a schedule of stage lines from Milwaukee in 1848. It would be possible to go on this line from Milwaukee, Sheboygan, or Green Bay, or to Galena by way of Madison, or to Chicago by way of Rockford. Once you were in Chicago, you could make connections for St. Louis or Michigan. And of course, you could also go to Janesville and Racine. Later, there were stage lines between Eau Claire and Black River Falls and Stevens Point and Wausau.
There was a type of braking. How did they brake the stage coaches at that time?
Well, I think that you probably have some pictures in your scrapbook, Dan, that can describe that better than I can.
I thought there was a shoe. Yes, we have. Now we're looking at a shoe that was placed under the wheel of the stagecoach and provided the braking for this stagecoach. You could have put a chain around the wheel as we showed with the ox team, but if you do this enough times, of course, you'd wear the actual tire out. This steel tire would be worn out, and it would be coming in contact with rocks and all kinds of friction. So they placed the shoe in. Now you had to skid up at the top of the hill, and then the skid would stay there and keep the wheel from rotating, and this would just plow a furrow of dirt as they went downhill and act to hold the wagon back. And of course, at the bottom, then they would have to unskid. Many of these drivers, when they were traveling alone and didn't have a helper, wouldn't get out to skid up, and they would go on down the hills and have accidents in that respect. It's interesting the way they drove these coaches also. Here we see the English type of driving where he has the reins all held in one hand, the four in hand. And he has the offside of the leaders, the offside of the wheelers, the near side of the leaders, and the near side of the wheelers. This is a four-horse team with two horses on the pole and two horses out on the lead. And he holds all the lines in one hand and would have to reach over and help the other hand as he pulled the reins through his glove, wearing a glove to keep, of course, from burning his hands or blistering him as he slipped the reins back and forth and as he tugged on them. The American, this is called the English method. The American method was six reins. Now, he held three reins in each hand, and in the left hand, he held the near, what was called the near reins, and the right hand he held the off reins. We say near and off because in the oxen, when the teamster walked alongside, the near ox was, he walked on the left side, so the near ox was the left off. They carried this term right on into horsemanship, so that even though the driver sat on the right, the near horse was the left horse, the off horse was the right horse. He would chop by chopping, that is just gently jerking on the reins, he would be able to make a gentle turn. If he had to make a longer turn, then he would reach over with the right hand, turn left, and take the reins and slip them through his left hand and then pull up as far as necessary to make that kind of a turn. It took a skillful driver because the roads left a lot to be desired.
In the stagecoach that we have a model of here, it'd be easy to tell some of the things that Dan has mentioned about stagecoach and stagecoach travel. This is a Concord coach, and it was not very comfortable to ride in such a coach, made of wood and of metal, and it also was suspended on leather straps. So undoubtedly, the passengers did not get a too smooth a ride, but probably become ill from the swaying motion of the coach. Now, in this particular type of coach, they could get from 9 to 15 people, and the luggage for the coach would be carried on top, or else it would be carried in the back in the boot right here. Now, this would be a typical coach of that period that Dan is describing.
But it took a pretty good driver, as I was saying, to handle a coach like this, driving four horses and not having any brakes. And this picture gives us some pretty good general idea. Notice that the horses only have the tugs and no way of holding back. And they had a schedule that they had to ride pell-mell over hill and valley and through mud and ruts and everything else. This is typical of the Burbank line, which had a contract with the government to transport mail from Milwaukee to St. Paul. They got $100 a day. I believe they had 19 coaches and 8 sleighs and 160 high-grade horses that they used to make this run. As I said, the road was full of ruts, and it was not uncommon for the driver to use his passengers as a kind of ballast. He would say, now gentlemen to the right, and now gentlemen to the left, and this kept the stage upright and kept it from tipping over. When two stages met, like on a narrow cut or something such as that, and not having the facility to back up, they would many times have to unload the coach, and then the passengers get out and help to work the coaches around each other, all load up and go on, so that it was a real hazardous operation in that respect. And even with all of the precautions that they took, the driver getting out possibly at every bridge and rearranging the plank so that a horse wouldn't stick his hoof through the planking, and the drivers had to be good. They were getting paid a pretty good salary by the government. But nevertheless, they tipped over a lot of coaches, and the road would be strewn with broken up coaches and sacks of flour and boxes of freight that were lost along the way, and horses with parts of harness on traveling on the prairie. So it was a hazardous operation and wasn't perfected to any degree. What did they carry their possessions and the people who rode on these coaches?
Well, one of the things that they would have used, of course, was the carpet bag that we had at the beginning of the show. It's a logical name for a bag as this, such as this. It is made out of carpet. It has leather handles and open, and it did have a divider. Now, in addition to a carpet bag, they might carry a hat box, which could contain a hat, or it might just as well contain a wig or a muff. Or they might carry a trunk similar to this one. It might be covered with deer skin or pig skin, or as this one is just made out of wood, but it does have brass studs and brass framework. This particular trunk came from Norway to America in about 1865. Now, and of course it does have a metal lock and a key. If we open the trunk, we can see some of the things that the traveler would use. Now this is a lady's hat. Calash, so-called, after the calash cab, and one can imagine what difficult times it would be to get into a coach with a hat like this, plus hoop skirts. But this hat, of course, did have an advantage in that it would collapse and pack fairly easily. Once the lady had arrived at her destination, she could wear a cap like this, a morning cap that she would wear inside. If the weather was especially bad and cold, then the foot warmer would be necessary. Now this particular foot warmer has a little door that with a metal catch and a can in which some coals could be placed in order to add heat to the warmer. And this is a fancy one, of course. It has an excellent floral design on the door. And it's made out of brass and out of wood. And the more holes you had in it, of course, the warmer an individual would be. Now, a muff, of course, was common in cold weather. This one's made out of raccoon. And, of course, a individual without a raccoon hat, of course, is unheard of in frontier history. If I can find the front of this one, I'll demonstrate. Now this would be a nice and warm hat to wear in the dead of winter, but if milder weather, he'd wear a different kind of a hat. Now we have a hat of Governor Fairchild, and it is a campaign type hat. It looks something like you see in the TV westerns today, but nevertheless it did serve its purposes. And of course it was always interesting once the traveler arrived at the inn. There'd be the blowing of the horn, the shouting of the drivers, the unhitching of the horses, the repairing of wheels and shoes if necessary, and the exchange of mail bags, and then, of course, the rehitching of horses at the inns.
There were many stagecoach inns, of course, and that was the meeting place of all these travelers. Probably one of the most famous of the stagecoach inns is a Wade House in Sheboygan County in the village of Greenbush. This was ordinarily not a stopping over place, but we are told that 200 travelers have stayed here on a given night, that It was doing a brisk business before the Civil War and up to the Civil War. It was actually more often used as a stopover for lunch or for a meal as a halfway house between Sheboygan and Fond du Lac. Here we see a little girl who is one of the fifth generation descendant of the original Wade family in the Wade House. The Wade House now is operated by the State Historical Society. There never was room enough at the inn to properly bed everybody, and you'd probably be apt to find yourself paying so much a square foot for space on the floor. In a room called the school section or the garret or the steerage, one just went up with his blanket and was allotted as much space as it took to lie down. The luckier people got mattresses which were stuffed with marsh hay called prairie feathers. That was supposed to make a more comfortable bed. When you went upstairs to sleep, you were handed a candle, and this was the form of lighting until they were using coal oil, kerosene, a little bit later. If you wanted to wash, there was a common sink, I suppose a bucket or a pitcher of cold, hard water, and a bar of yellow laundry soap. The ordinary price for meals ranged all the way, depending on the price of food, from 12.5 cents, 25 cents, and 50 cents a meal, although the common charge was about $1 a day for room and board. If you had a horse, you paid 25 cents to put the horse in and keep him there overnight. There was a lot going on at the Stagecoach Inns, and the State Historical Society has many pictures of the old inns that were operated around the state of Wisconsin, and we'll now look at some of those from our scrapbook.
One of the early inns was located in Madison. That would be the Peck Inn that was built in 1837. The visitors from New York stayed there, and later it was the site of the Capitol Hotel. Hawk's Tavern at Delafield was run by Nelson P. Hawks, was noted for its good fare, two huge Franklin stoves that burned 120 cords of hard wood a winter, and the jokes of its landlord. Hawk's Inn is being restored today. Another inn, we don't have a picture of it, is the Dell House at the Wisconsin River above Kilburn, and was the scene of many river brawls and always a favorite spot for the lumbermen. Now here is a hotel register at DePere House, a famous inn at DePere, and a sign by many noted travelers. This is the register from August 4th through 8, 1868. At the lower right are the signatures of Horace Greeley of the New York Tribune, Horatio Seymour, the Democratic candidate for president in 1868, Frank Blair, the Democratic candidate for vice president. But the old Stagecoach Inn had many uses besides eating and sleeping.
Well, they were actually the social center of the community. The Stagecoach Inn was probably the biggest place and the only center large enough to serve any real purpose, such as the general town meeting was held there. It was a church meeting place. It was the voting place. Surveyors' headquarters. If you held a dance, that's where it would be. All kinds of social life was carried on there. If you had a circus performer or a ventriloquist, a wrestling match to be shown, or if you were holding court, a post office. In fact, if anything was going on at the town, it was going on at the Stagecoach Inn. And this was the kind of life that was led there, and a social center indeed. But more than stagecoaches came to the inn. There were all types of sleighs, and the fancy cutters were being brought over here from the east. And we have we're looking at a cutter or a type of sleigh that was used by the Case family in Racine about 1902. Note that it has a double set of runners, and that it isn't a single seater; that it's a double seated affair, real fancy rig. And these early travelers took a lot of pride in a nice-looking rig and the horses that hauled them. And they were as proud of a good horse and a cutter in those days as we are today if we can own a nice sports car or even a real nice sedan. Thurman's going to show us a model of a sleigh that the State Historical Society has.
This particular sleigh was made by the T.G. Matt Company of Stoughton. And the purpose of the sleigh is not really known. It may have been a salesman's demonstrator model, or it may have been used for a doll or for a baby. But it is typical of the sleighs or cutters that were made by this particular company in Stoughton.
Of course, baby carriages too were made and copied after all of the fancy conveyances that the adults rode around in, and a plant in Sheboygan was making baby carriages such as the one we're looking at here. About the same time, of course, that this type of full-size vehicle was being made. But generally, we'll look at more carriages in our next show when we talk about the thing that the kind of vehicles that the horse hauled around. Of course, there was all kinds of transportation going on in Wisconsin at the same time. The rivers, the boats were operating on the rivers. We had a buildup of traffic there. The railroads were getting started up. And stagecoaches and wagons and buggies were operating on the roads. But the horse was to play an important part in the transportation in America and in Wisconsin for the next 50 years. He was to be hauling the mail, and the firemen and icemen were to depend upon him. In fact, everybody, including the family, being transported by buggy before the automobile was to come in and displace him. The days of the stagecoach were actually over by 1870 after the Civil War, and the railroads had gotten a good build in there. But the horse was still hauling and was to haul for a long time until up and after World War I before he was to be retired as an animal of racing and showing and riding and to be admired by us, and left a lot of nostalgia to see the horse go, of course. But we'll be talking about the horse in our next show and the different and many kinds of vehicles that he hauled on Wisconsin's dirt roads and muddy roads.
This has been Wheels Across the Prairie, story of the conveyances and roads which crossed America's prairies and Wisconsin's part in this transportation history. Next week, Good Old Horse. Host for the series is Dan Schutz, director of the Safety Division of the Wisconsin Motor Vehicle Department. He is assisted by Thurman Fox of the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. This series is produced by the State Historical Society of Wisconsin and WHA-TV.